Even for those of you that have Christmas haunts opening, planning now for 2021 and what you're going to do year-round is critical. So here is a bonus episode from Jonathan and Crystal over at Haunt Weekly, and this episode is all about some of the ideas they have for smaller attractions to get year-round revenue. I'm going to put you in right at the beginning of the topic discussion, but if you want to catch the full episode or watch the video version, head over to hauntweekly.com. Enjoy.
You know, basically, though, if you're not a year-round haunt, you're not making year-round revenue in most cases. So we wanted to fix that.
Right.
Our idea was we wanted to find ways haunted attractions could make money 52 weeks a year, 365 days, all 12 months, and things that could be implemented now.
Right.
Or exactly. Almost now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it might take you a little while to get some of the stuff set up.
But they're all things.
But once it's there, yeah. It's there.
Well, and All of the things we're talking about, we're not going to be talking about escape rooms and axe throwing.
Right.
Those types of things have been like the go-to.
Yeah, people have already done that if they're going to.
Yeah, they've already done it if they have the ability and desire to do it. They've already done it. And also, they're not the pandemic-friendliest activities.
Exactly.
It's kind of, an escape room is a big ask in 2020 right now.
It is. I do know that they're open, though.
There are some that are open.
I don't know how, but they are.
And I know they're having to go through a lot of additional cleaning headaches they're having to go through and sanitize. And good God, sanitizing an escape room just sounds like a nightmare to me.
Yeah, this is a revenue stream where, you know, you have to put signs saying, don't pull on electrical cords. Because people will. They will touch everything in an escape room.
Do not touch the outlets. These are just outlets.
Yeah, exactly.
Please.
Don't
but then again,
the
a lot of escape rooms don't help that by having electric puzzles. Like the one that we went to is like, don't touch the outlets, but you can touch the fuses. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
So yeah, we will not be talking about physical escape rooms and axe throwing. If that's year-round income you've probably already got it or have a plan to obtain it.
Yeah.
But still, there is a bunch of things that you can do starting today and have up and running probably almost all these cases a lot sooner than you think.
Right.
And the first one is?
Virtual escape rooms.
I thought we weren't talking about escape rooms, Chris.
Exactly.
We're not talking about physical ones.
But virtual ones are a different story.
Yeah.
And you can see our experiences about it. You can hear about it on episode 247.
Yeah, we need to do some more. I think we need to get with Ellie and do a few more.
Yeah, we should. So virtual escape rooms actually predate physical ones. This is how it got started.
Yeah.
Was with little flash games that you got out of the room.
Yeah, and now that flash is no longer a thing.
Yeah.
I wonder if all those old virtual escape rooms are just dead to the world.
I don't know. It's harder to find true ones that are fun, though.
Yeah.
Because I've looked for them.
Anyways, but yeah, this is how the escape room got its start, was virtual escape rooms.
Yeah.
And right now, a lot of haunts, and a lot of escape rooms that don't have haunts attached to them, have launched a secondary or a new primary business, in some cases, of creating virtual escape rooms.
Right.
And as she said, episode 247, we went into much greater detail than we can go here. So if this is an idea that interests you, I'd go back there. But yeah, I mean, we have played escape rooms that have ranged from the very simple and quick to set up.
Yeah.
You just need, you know, some images and a few questions and a few puzzles. And
images. I think haunts have, you know, cool sets. Yeah. I think they might even have a photographer that they could call.
Yeah, you don't need much, and there's not a lot of programming involved. There's a surprisingly little amount of programming, actually.
Yeah.
The hardest part is coming up with compelling puzzles that exist in a virtual space.
Right.
And honestly, a lot of the puzzles you do in a regular escape room translate very well. For example, the 5-number combination lock, which seems to be everywhere,
right,
translates super easy into a password online.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so that is one way to do the virtual escape room. If you already have an escape room, but you don't have it open because of COVID, there are people, you can have your person
employee
in it, your employee in it, and move the things around for people.
No, we have not done an escape room like that.
Right, because we feel squeaky about it.
I feel kind of weird ordering some dude or dudette around like that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm glad that you can only see their hands, because I can imagine how many times I'd be rolling my eyes at the stupid suggestions that customers would make.
Yeah, hopefully they're not mic'd.
Yeah.
You dumb mother.
Yeah, exactly.
You stupid son of a bitch.
Like, yeah.
You know it's bad when you see the hands like leap up and hit their own forehead and smack.
That's why you only see one hand sometimes.
Because the other one's face-palming.
Exactly.
But no, this is a great pandemic-friendly activity. And if you do a digital-only one,
right,
basically you have a one-time setup cost. And every time someone buys it, you're just earning revenue from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you can charge close to
an actual
full price.
Yeah.
You know, we've paid escape room prices to play online escape rooms.
Now, one thing about that is it's not per person usually when charging tickets. So it's like, yeah, it's $30, but that's for your entire team.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you'll have to work out your own pay scale for that.
Yeah, you will. And honestly, it's the best way to do that is just to see what else is out there and figure out where yours fits next to theirs.
Right.
The relative complexity and depth of what you're doing. Because like I said, these can go from very, very basic. I mean, teachers are setting these up for classrooms.
Yeah, exactly.
Using nothing but Google Forms.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the one that we played in England did that too.
Yeah.
Because you just put in the password, unlocked the next area.
And it told you kind of what to do and where to go on the interwebs to find the next answer.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there are issues there. Obviously, you're going to have support for it. And this is going to be much easier to execute if you have a strong online presence.
Right.
Especially with your social media and your website. If basically your online stuff is completely an afterthought.
Yeah.
And you've not really invested much in growing either your social media or your website presence, you've got a lot further turf to cover than someone with a strong website, good traffic to it, good social media following on multiple platforms. It'll be much easier to convert that into a virtual escape room audience. And that's true for a lot of what we're going to be talking about, but it's especially true with this.
Yeah.
Because, once again, you're asking people to embark on an experience that they probably haven't had. Most people, even the people who have played escape rooms, a lot of them have not touched a virtual one.
Right.
So you're asking for, it can be a big ask.
Yeah.
So something to think about.
Yeah, and I want to throw in here, because I don't think we cover it anywhere else, there are other types of small games that if you do know someone who is a developer or can search that, you know, find and seeks with pictures of your haunt.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way you make revenue off of it, at least the way I've seen in those types of games, is to buy speed up passes for clues.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, free to play, but microtransaction.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, you buy a hint or a skip or a...
Exactly. Yeah.
That makes a degree of sense. I can see that.
Yeah.
And you could also theoretically do that as an add-on to the escape room, too.
Right.
You could use the same model, even.
Yeah.
Free to play the escape room, but if you need a hint...
Right.
It costs, you know, X amount per hint.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That could be interesting.
Yeah.
Though with that, if it's the same escape room and everyone's playing it, then there's little to stop other people from just posting the solutions.
Like, yeah, but I've learned that, well, from my experience, you're so busy trying to solve the puzzles yourself that you don't want the outside help.
Yeah.
But you will take a hint occasionally.
Yeah, within the rules of the game.
Yeah, because it's faster to pay, you know, a nominal amount than it is to try to find the answer online.
Depends on how fast the payment process is on that one, actually.
Yeah.
Anyways, so just something to think about. Virtual escape room / other types of online games that might be relevant to a haunted attraction. Surprisingly easy to set up, especially if you've got someone on staff or someone around you that is pretty good at web development.
Right.
Just something to check out. And definitely, before, once again, episode 247, and check out some other virtual escape rooms online before jumping into that. There are a lot. I found them to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Looking forward to doing another soon.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's about it. Item number two, merchandise.
Uh-huh.
You sell merch at your haunt. Why don't you sell it online? Why don't you sell it 365?
Yeah.
Why can't I buy a haunt shirt for Christmas?
Yeah, and
or a birthday.
Exactly. And I've tried to do this before in the past, and it's frustrating because not a lot of haunts do this.
One thing that's interesting, I was researching haunts and who was doing what we were talking about. I found one haunt that actually does several of the things we're talking about this week.
Okay.
Including this one. Mm-hmm. The Darkness and all the Larry Kirchner haunts. Which makes sense because for all the disagreements we have with Larry Kirchner, on the haunt business side, he's savvy.
Yeah.
There's no denying that.
Yeah, I mean, his haunt is a, you know,
yeah,
a showcase,
yeah,
of his props.
He's a savvy haunt businessman. I cannot argue, mm-hmm, that. Like I said, disagreements with him. Some of them very public.
Yeah.
But I give credit where it's due. He's very savvy on the business side, and he actually has this one and the next one right on the Darkness's homepage.
Yeah, now I wanted to make sure before I said anything, but this is the one because my brother loves 13th Gate.
Yeah.
And we used to get him shirts every year, but especially this year since we haven't been able to go, I just checked their site and they do not have one.
No, and it makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, yeah, because if anybody should, they should.
Yeah. Basically, setting up an online merch store is stupid easy.
I've had several over the years.
It is stupidly easy. It used to be stupid hard.
Yeah.
I remember way back when you first launched Gothic Elegance, what was it, 2001 or some crap like that?
Yeah.
Sitting there and having to code the PayPal buttons by hand and all that crap.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Eventually I took over all that.
You did. But for the initial setup, I'm sitting there coding all these like 100 PayPal buttons by hand and hating my life. But in 2020, there are literally services that will do it all for you, pretty much.
Yeah.
All but.
Yeah, exactly. They make it really easy. It's basically filling out a form to get a product online.
And it gets even easier because it doesn't even really require money.
No.
Because you can use a print-on-demand service. And I Googled print-on-demand services for this and just immediately got overwhelmed by an avalanche of these services. It was like, I'm drowning in print-on-demand services.
Yeah.
So Printify, Printful, Teespring, Cafe Press are just some of the bigger names in that industry.
Right.
And a lot of these will set up your shop on their site, but some will actually integrate with a Shopify site or a Squarespace site or a Wix site or a WooCommerce site or whatever type of storefront you have. And basically, your customers will never know they're getting a print-on-demand product.
Exactly.
You will never look, smell, touch, taste any of these shirts. They will be bought online, you will get your cut of the revenue, and they will be shipped from the printer directly to those people.
Which I really like that, because as the prize winners have known, I might be a little late with the shipping sometimes.
Yeah.
So having somebody else handle all that for me, I like that.
So, I mean, what's the argument against it? Oh, we don't want to get into a shipping service. Don't.
Yeah.
Just don't.
Yeah.
What other arguments could there be? You know, you hate making more money?
Yes. And so I hear in my head some of our listeners going, but you guys have been talking about getting shirts in an online store forever. Well, maybe that'll be something we do over holiday break.
Yeah. And honestly, part of the reason we haven't done it is because our audience, even though we've got a very loyal, very awesome group of people, we're not a very big podcast. And we actually have no desire to be a big podcast. It's one of the funnier things about it. We like our niche. We like the people we have.
Yeah.
We like our group. We like our peeps. So it's absolutely a valid point, though, that we should, if it's so easy, we should. If you have physical merch, just simply get a Shopify or a Squarespace account and run with that. Either or can set you up with an online store for physical goods very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It works out very well.
Yeah, now I will say that I have used both Etsy and Shopify and Squared.
Mm-hmm. No, it is Square, but the Square store is through Wix.
Right. Yeah, so Square's online site. I like the Square online site best, Shopify next. Etsy, I do not like because they take a large chunk. It looks like it's really cheap to list stuff on there, but their percentages add up.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to warn people about that.
And it adds up really bad on higher ticket items.
Right.
It's one of the things to note with Etsy.
Yeah.
So if you have more expensive merch, Etsy's probably a definite no-go. But, like, for t-shirts and things, it might be more fine. Like, you were selling $100 headdresses and things like that.
Right.
Versus a $20 t-shirt or a $25 t-shirt.
Exactly.
There's a big difference. So just do the math is what it comes down to. Take the minute, do the math. If you want to get your hands a little dirty, WooCommerce setups are pretty easy to create and work with. I mean, that's a little messier, a little less hand-holdy, but not by much, if I'm being honest. And that way you're not paying a storefront fee. You know, you're just paying for regular, good old-fashioned hosting.
Exactly.
But seriously, this is so easy to do. I do not know why every haunt that has merch sales doesn't do it.
I don't either.
If you have online ticket sales and no online merch sales.
Yeah.
Why? Just why?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, serious question. No, what is holding you back?
Yeah. What is holding you back? And if you've got, like, overstock that you bought that has a year on it, you know, you might be thinking, oh, customers don't want, you know, a shirt that says 2018 or something, but they might, because
especially
they
if
do
collectors.
It for bands all the time with the tours.
Yeah, the Metallica tour 2020, buy the shirt and whatever. Yeah, no, I mean, it's true. And especially if the shirt changes, like the House of Shock shirts.
Yeah.
People brag about their collection of those.
Right.
Even now, you know.
Yeah.
All these years later, people still brag about that.
Yeah, we bought one a year.
Yeah, for a while there. For a good while there, yeah.
Yeah, and we bought the first year from New Orleans Nightmare.
Yeah.
We bought one then.
But no, I mean, if you have shirts that change, this is...
And you should have shirts that change.
Yeah. This is just throwing money away if you're not doing this. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Leaving it on the table.
You're leaving it on the table. Yeah, it might not be a huge line of business, but believe me, birthdays, Christmas, t-shirts, other holidays.
Yeah.
Birthdays, Christmas, no, other holidays, whatever. I mean,
yeah.
What some if guy wants to give his girl a haunt shirt for Valentine's Day. What the hell?
What if a couple got married at your haunt and they want to buy shirts for everybody in their party?
Or even just something for their anniversary.
Exactly. That was what I was getting to next, is anniversary gifts.
Yeah.
Because haunt weddings happen. That actually brings us into some other stuff.
Yeah. Which the third item is?
Film commercials and shoots.
Yeah, film and commercial, like... Film and commercial shoots, but also I would add location existing, like being a location. For
exactly.
Things.
For we'll just, like weddings, like we were just talking about.
Yeah. Being a location.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is always interesting because take it from someone who lives in Hollywood South, quote unquote, what they've been calling New Orleans for years now. Much to my chagrin when I try to go to the point in the middle of a fucking shoot for the Claw series. Sorry, that vent meant absolutely nothing to anyone else.
It wasn't the Claws that was so.
Oh
so
no,
bad
it was the Purge TV
the
series.
The Purge
it was
TV
really
series
bad. Oh
was there every weekend for like 2 months
and blocking off every goddamn thing
and filling up our bar with zombies. I don't mind zombies in the bar. I just mind the bar being full.
it's a small bar, man. We can't be assholes and elbows even pre-COVID. Come on.
Yeah, it's about this size.
It's literally like, the sitting area is not much larger than the room we're in.
Yeah,
seriously. The thing about it is you have a lot of well-made sets and things in the haunt, and filming is ongoing.
Yeah.
Filming films, movies, TV shows, commercials are shooting. They're doing so with strict COVID protocols. And we know this because we have a friend of ours who's into acting, and she has multiple times gone on Facebook going, where can I get an emergency COVID test in the next 2 hours?
Right. Because she needed to get one and get the result so that she could audition.
Yeah. Even just to show up for a tryout or an audition, she had to, for even, I think it was in one of those cases, just for an extra bit. Yeah. So it's like, they're following a very strict COVID protocol. Everyone is being tested. And they are keeping it as safe as humanly possible during a pandemic.
Yeah.
So look up the local standards on COVID testing and filming. I think you'll find that they are way more intense than most workplaces.
Yeah. And also don't forget about the indie filmmakers.
Yes.
Because, you know, they might not be able to pay what the big budget films will do, but they could still do something.
Yeah. Yeah. Being a location is a potentially a big deal. And this was the other one, like I said, the Darkness has on its site.
Right.
It has a page advertising it as a place to shoot movies or have weddings and other tomfoolery that you might want to have at Haunted House.
Yep, exactly.
For the filming thing, you'll most likely have your success in spring and summer when people are typically shooting things for a more October release.
Mm-hmm.
So think about that in terms of your haunt building.
Right.
And how that will impact that. But the location fees vary wildly from place to place. So check and ensure it's worth your while in your area. Here in New Orleans, it absolutely would be. So much is filmed here.
Yeah.
I have no reason to doubt New Orleans Nightmare or the I know the Mortuary does it.
Yeah. And we know 13th Gate in Baton Rouge does also.
So you've got all of these film companies already here. Location fees are good. And yeah.
Well, I mean, New Orleans Nightmare makes sense because they've got the New Orleans scene.
Yeah.
And they got a huge gravel area. Yeah. Street. So they could, host a TV series there.
Yeah.
And then they wouldn't have to worry about extras walking into their shot from or closing off the street or anything like that.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, honestly, this one seems obvious. Now, one of the obvious elements of it is if you are in BFE, it's probably not going to work as well.
But reach out to your local towns and let them know.
Yeah. And once again, put this information on your website and have someone there that they can contact saying, hey, we're interested.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the things that's always kind of mind blowing. It's like, if I were interested in doing I know who I would contact, like New Orleans Night. I know who, but if I were not in the haunt industry, not involved, who the hell would I contact? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
We know because we are us, but random filmmaker 39 would not.
or location scout.
Yeah, or location scout probably would not. So that is something to really think through. And we've had people reach out to us about shooting. Now, we had to turn that down fly out for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But we've had people reach out to us about filming.
Right.
It can be a secondary source of revenue, and I know some haunts that do a lot of this business depend upon it to stay in the black.
Right.
They can have a completely successful season, gangbuster numbers, but still need a film shoot or two to push them into the profit-making territory.
No.
So, it happens.
I wonder if local colleges with, a film school would be interested in working out a deal with haunts.
Why not?
No.
Why not? That's actually a really interesting idea that I'm pretty sure you just came up with right here on the spot.
Maybe.
No, it's not a bad idea. Reach out to your local schools. Scholages.
Scholages.
Reach out to your local scholage. I went to scholage. I have a degree from the scholage.
God.
Reach out to your local schools, and this could include both high schools if they have, magnet schools for the art might have a film department.
Right.
And also colleges, not scholages. That won't do you a whole lot of good.
Yeah.
Reach out to those. That's a good idea. All right. Number four, haunted garage sales. This is something that always intrigued me. You have stuff that breaks, costumes that wear out, items that you upgrade. Sell your old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just give it away or throw it out. And I have seen so much stuff. Haunts are pretty notorious for throwing things out. Stuff that may be of interest to someone. Even if you don't think there's any value in it, maybe someone that's a big fan of your haunt remembers that prop.
Right.
Or someone, or another haunt, maybe a home haunt or a yard haunt or a charity haunt. Yeah, that prop may not be very good to you, but for them...
Mm-hmm.
It would be top tier. It'd be a spotlight piece.
Yeah, exactly.
And they'd be willing to part with a little bit of money for it. Is this going to be a major source of income? No.
No, but I mean, even so, after restrictions and we're back into in-person, this could be an in-person thing.
Yeah.
And you could have crafts shows like dark art markets at your haunt whenever we're able to meet in person again.
Yeah. But I mean, the Haunted Garage Sale was a haunt con tradition. That was the last day of haunt con. After the classes let out, they would set up the Haunted Garage Sale, and we would all go and look at what haunts were trying to dispose of and ideally make a quick buck off of. And we bought a few things at those.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but there's nothing stopping you from holding a virtual one. Check out Facebook Marketplace. Look into Craigslist. There are various haunter groups on Facebook. Some of them are swaps. I know there's a special group for the SFX masks, things like that. Great way of getting rid of stuff that you're no longer using, but not just giving it away or throwing it out or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, not all haunts, but a lot of haunts tend to be just, yeah, we're done with this. And even if it's worth maybe several hundred dollars to someone else, just
chuck it.
Just chuck it. Give it to an actor to take home randomly.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Your biggest fans are going to want to buy some of your history. Mm-hmm. And it gives them a feeling of ownership in the haunt itself by having that piece.
Yeah.
But even if it's a small piece, like, okay, this is a story. I don't know how many of you guys watch BattleBots. But we are huge BattleBots fans when it's around.
Yeah.
And we are Team Waiachi for life. I love Team Waiachi.
Yeah.
And the reason is because when Son of Waiachi had their championship season way, way back in the old BattleBots, going way back when they were on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
So we're pulling some history here. They actually auctioned off some damaged parts from the Son of Waiachi, two of the hammer arms specifically.
Right.
On eBay. I won them. My broke ass in that time.
Yeah.
Because I, broke ass college kid at that moment, I had no, I didn't have two nickels to rub together.
Nope.
But I managed to get that.
Yep.
And they actually sent it to me for less than the minimum.
Right.
And agreed to pay shipping under the condition, if I ever made my ass to Wisconsin, I would give them a case of craft beer.
Yeah.
So I'm still holding myself to that promise. If I ever do make it to Wisconsin, I will absolutely positively do that. I will drop it off. But so, yeah. But that we have pieces of a championship BattleBot in our house.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take photos and post them later to Haunt Weekly.
Yeah. But so we have that. And because of that, I feel a strong ownership, not literal ownership, but, you know, connection with Team Waiachi and BattleBots more broadly. I mean, you don't end up with two heavy-ass metal hammer arms without feeling a little bit of a connection. That's love. That's love for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you have things that are interesting but maybe not super useful, you might be able to get some money for.
Right.
Just a thought.
Yeah, and I want to talk one quick second about the idea of the markets at the haunts. So how do you make money off of that? Because other people are selling their stuff. You charge for booths.
Yeah, table fee.
Table fee. Like, I've done this so many times, and it's anywhere from $20 to $25.
But also,
starting up to, I think the most expensive table I've paid for is $50.
Yeah, but you've done mostly smaller events.
Yeah, and this is, and I would expect this to be a small event.
And also, if you do that, don't forget to open up your concession stand.
Yeah, open up the concession stand, open up your merch booth.
Yeah.
Because why not? You're going to be there anyway.
Open, sell your merch, sell your junk. I don't want to call it junk because it's one man's trash is another man's treasure and all that jazz.
Exactly.
Open it up to other crafty people.
Yeah.
Sell, you know, sell your food, sell your merch, sell your used stuff.
Yeah.
And collect table fees from everyone else.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. And back to the garage sale for one moment. I just remembered our light tunnel, our long display of pumpkin lights started with a Halloween arch we bought as a HauntCon garage sale.
Now, we graduated past that arch.
Yes. Yes.
Mercifully.
We gave that one away.
we did give that one away. We did not attempt to resell that one.
No. No, we gave it to
a
neighbor.
Yeah. It was who lived a much better use. We got much better life there. All right. Number five.
All right. Character appearances and cameo. And Jonathan mentioned cameo last week.
Yeah, I did.
So, and we really should have switched numbers
looking at this.
Because I had the haunted garage sale because I grew up going to garage sales.
Yeah, and I guess I'm the one that spent like an hour on cameo.com today.
I know, telling us all the people we could pay to have us say things for us.
Yes. Basically, if you've never been to cameo.com, A, do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, positively do this. It's also an app, apparently.
Yeah.
I just went to cameo.com. And the long and short of it is celebrities, large, small, and indifferent, get paid money. They set the rate themselves, and they get paid money to do short promotional things. You can pay them to say custom messages, basically.
Yeah.
And It is like the most eccentric list of people you can fathom.
Yeah.
Like nowhere else in the universe is Ernie Hudson sitting next to Mick Foley.
Right.
But on Cameo homepage he was.
Yeah.
So things like that. And Mick Foley is a wrestler for people who don't know. I think everyone knows who Ernie Hudson is. But yeah. No, it was crazy. Like we saw like Mick Foley, Ernie Hudson, Red Man, Santa Claus, or someone claiming to be Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Doug Flutie was on there, the NFL player. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow. You know, you've got this weird assortment of athletes, YouTube celebrities,
right.
Actors, musicians.
Yeah.
I mean, for the love of God, the Satchel, this guitarist from Steel Panther, was there.
Yeah.
Hustling. So, yeah, a lot of people are making a side hustle here. I did not see any haunted attraction characters, though.
No. No, where are they? Where are the spooky kids?
You know, if your haunt has a memorable character that people know,
yeah.
Get them on this.
Exactly.
There is a chance it may not be much. The fees range incredibly wildly on this site. The cheapest I saw was $12 for a short message. The most expensive I saw was $1,200 from some random rapper that I did not know. Honestly, I'm not the target market for that one, I'm pretty sure, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But to give you an idea, Vicente Fox, the former Mexican president,
yeah.
was $300.
Yeah.
You know, the president of a major country, millions of people, and $300 to get him to...
Yeah, there are lots of politicians on this. I was surprised by that.
Not a lot of political people, yeah. including people like we know from like recent history, too.
Yeah. And, I mean, you could feasibly get endorsements from them.
Yeah.
You could pay them to endorse your haunt. But we're not talking about paying people. We're talking about making money.
Yeah. You could theorize, and then that's the other side. It could be a thing later down the road if you want to use this in a commercial. It might be a way to get that done, but man, this is an opportunity here to have special birthday greetings, you know, holiday messages, things like that.
Proposals.
Yeah, proposals. Wedding proposals. Your haunt character could be responsible for getting two people, causing two people to get married by doing Halloween lovers giving a custom wedding proposal.
Yeah.
You can do all kinds of crazy things like that with this, and it's just cameo.com, cameo.com. You can sign up as a quote-unquote celebrity.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they have Santa Claus. Obviously, you do.
Yeah.
They have Santa Claus and Santa Puppet, too. Santa Puppet was cheaper than Santa Claus.
I would expect that, actually. Santa Puppet isn't trying to be Santa Claus.
Yeah, that's true. Let's make up on Santa Puppet, too. We got to be honest. Let's make up and costuming work for the Santa Puppet, I'm sure.
Okay.
So, yeah, but no, seriously, cameo.com, I think this is a potential market for haunted attractions that have memorable and recognizable characters. If you don't have that, then this is another reason to start investing in that.
Right.
I mean...
Exactly.
And then I am deeply frightened at the number of haunts, big haunts in some cases, that do not have major characters like that.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned, as we were trying to think of, you know, who's locally, who's the big character? And it's like, well, I think Jonathan's
it. Bernie Baxter is actually it, even though we were small potatoes, but it's just because the other major haunts haven't really put forth a character. Now, the House of Shock did. They had their characters.
Yeah, they had Belial and all of theirs that were really cool. And Mortuary used to have Ravencroft.
Yeah.
But
I haven't seen Ravencroft in a long-ass time.
Brought him out of retirement for
the 10-year anniversary. Because, yeah, Ravencroft was the guy, like, the first, like, 5 or 6 years or so of the Mortuary.
Yeah.
He was the big dude, and he would usually be roaming in the queue line, welcome to my house, and doing
doing his shtick. You were going into his place.
This is my house. What are you doing here?
Yeah.
He was actually a really good actor, too. Really, really good.
Yeah, and whenever we think of ones from elsewhere, Max with Pumpkin Smasher.
Yeah.
And that's the only named character I know, probably because I know Max.
But yeah.
He does a lot of photo ops with kids and things.
Yeah.
And has an own.
Yeah, Max, if you can, get Pumpkin Smasher on Cameo.
Yeah.
Get on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Get with
your
the
haunt and
make it happen.
Work it out.
Trust me, it's an opportunity. I'd be very curious to see how it goes.
Yeah.
Okay, number 6.
All right. Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to need a little crow here.
Yeah. Well, back, yes and no.
Yeah.
Well, we
talked about it back in episode 77, and we said that we didn't really see it working for haunts. Yep. But we've learned a lot since then. We've grown because that was way, that was almost 200 episodes ago.
Well, that, and I think we were talking about, we were focusing more on the risks than the rewards of
right.
it. And one of the things, and we'll go into it in a minute, but I think we've seen a few crowdfunding campaigns that happened that made us change the way we approach this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. But long story short, too late, is we were pretty down on it way back in episode 77.
Yeah.
And the reason is, whenever you do crowdfunding of any stripe, there are risks and there are rewards.
Yes.
The rewards are you get a very dedicated audience. You get a stable month-to-month income, even if it's not very much. It's a mm-hmm. relatively stable income that would not be there otherwise. And you get amazingly close access to your most loyal fans. These are the people that are giving you month-to-month money to see what you're up to and see what's going on. These are people who love you that much. You know, and mm-hmm. you have a way to be directly in front of their eyeballs at any moment.
Yep.
Isn't that awesome?
It is.
So think about that. I mean, and one of the things, like, okay, the Cyanide and Happiness guys, I don't know if you're familiar with them. They do the comic book, the comic series, Cyanide and Happiness. They do cartoons too. Very, very NSFW
right.
comic strip and YouTube series, but funny as hell usually.
Yeah. Especially if you have a dark sense of humor.
Yeah. If you have a very dark sense of humor, which
this room might be the one to do that. Yeah.
So basically when they wanted to do their first game, Joking Hazard, they were approached by Kickstarter.
Right.
And with Kickstarter, they're like, we don't need crowdfunding. We have the money. We have resources. We don't need it.
Right.
And Kickstarter's like, well, stop thinking about the funding side and start thinking about the crowd side of it. These are your fans. This is your audience. It's a way to get in contact and get buy-in from your fans.
Yeah.
And that kind of struck a chord with me.
Right.
And that maybe I was thinking about it the wrong way. Because I was thinking about the funding side almost completely and thinking about the risks
right.
that come with that funding, which are basically that you have to provide the regular content, the perks that you promise, and you will likely have to include free or discounted tickets. And there's just a weird sense of ownership when you do something that a Patreon doesn't like, or even if it's a Kickstarter backer, they take it a little more personally.
Yeah.
A little more harsh.
Yeah, they feel betrayed because yeah. they are your biggest fan.
They feel a sense of ownership.
Yeah, exactly.
They feel a sense of ownership. And in this case, a more literal sense of ownership.
Yeah.
I talk about owning this Waiachi Arms. I feel ownership. No, not literal ownership. This is literal ownership.
Exactly.
That's how it feels, even if it's not true. One thing I would say is, if you're going to give away tickets or things to Patreons past a certain length of time or whatever, I would look to doing free VIP upgrades.
Yeah.
Or at the most, one free ticket. Nobody goes to a haunt alone. Pretty much no one.
Yeah. Very few people that I've seen.
Yeah. So give away one ticket. That way they buy.
Yeah.
One.
I don't think you've ever, outside of like conventions, called out one to go in for our haunt. Like, it's not in my memory that that's ever happened.
I'm sitting here trying to think when I've done it. No. And part of that is, there have been a few times up front, one person has shown up.
Uh-huh.
But if they are, like, they've got a group of three behind them or two behind them.
Yeah.
I'll buddy them up.
Yeah.
Because especially on Halloween night, because Jesus Christ, we got to get that line going. if it's one of the earlier nights and we're not running a queue, yeah, fuck it. Right. They can go by themselves. But
yeah.
But if it's Halloween night and we're running that mammoth line we usually run, no, they're getting bunched up. Yeah. Sorry, you just made some new friends. I'd get their name, shake their hand now. And
exactly.
Exchange phone numbers just in case you get lost.
Nope.
You know, y'all just became friends.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but you could also try Kickstarter, but remember, that's just a one-time payment. It could be useful if you're looking for covering building costs or something like that, or for right. a major new setup or a major new set thing we want to do. But yeah, then and Kickstarter also reduces the ongoing contact you have.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Kickstarter Pro, because usually once the Kickstarter has been delivered, contact is expected to end.
Right.
Patreon, you get that ongoing, possibly year-over-year contact.
Right, and some quick ideas to throw out for what you could offer customers on your Patreon. Behind-the-scenes looks.
Yeah.
Makeup tutorials. Getting together with the cast or one of the
Q&As.
Q&As, exactly. I mean, it doesn't have to be physical goods.
No. This is for people that are your fans. These are for people that like you and want you to succeed.
And they have all the questions.
Oh, good God.
Because they always have all the questions.
Yes, they do.
It's adorable.
And that brings us to our last item.
Yeah.
As we're closing out on time.
Yeah, virtual tours and virtual events. So we've gone to a behind-the-scenes tour of a couple of haunted houses.
A few, more than a few, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah, the biggest one we've talked about is Hell's Gate.
Yeah, that was an amazing tour.
That was an amazing behind-the-scenes tour. I would love to take it again virtually. Like, and I don't know why more haunts don't do virtual behind-the-scenes, especially if they're going to do charged behind-the-scenes tours in person.
Yeah, right now, Facebook just made it stupid easy to sell tickets to virtual events.
Yeah.
They have been shoving it down my throat every time I go live on Facebook. Do you want to sell tickets to this? You want to sell tickets to this? You can sell tickets to this?
Yep, you can share it out to other groups. You can do it.
Oh, my God. No, we're not trying to sell tickets to the live podcast, JHC, man.
Yeah.
Stop it.
No.
But you could?
You could.
So yeah, considering doing behind the scenes tours, if your location is known for being haunted, ghost hunts are a big thing now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a skeptic, but that doesn't mean those aren't big business.
Right.
But yeah, do special events online, have parties, Q&As, do virtual scare events. There's all kinds of stuff here. Be creative.
Yeah.
Come up. Virtual events are a big because of the pandemic. But they're also super easy to market. Facebook and YouTube both make it really easy to market these and get them out there.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's not a lot of work.
No.
There's reward for it. And virtual is now more than ever part of everyday life.
And one of the cool things about virtual tours is that you can reach an audience outside of your physical audience. You're no longer constricted by that 50-mile radius we talk about, 25-mile radius
exactly.
We talk about.
Like, if we could take a virtual tour of Headless Horseman.
Yeah. Oh, I'm there.
Exactly.
Heartbeat. I'll be there tomorrow.
How much you want me to pay?
Yeah. Where's the fee?
Yeah.
You know, you could say that for Erebus. You could say that for a lot of these haunts.
The Queen Mary.
Oh, that'd be a great one. Yeah. No, there's all these opportunities out there to take these virtual tours. Why not do it? Especially, and right now be a great time to do it because you haven't started your renovations, probably.
Right.
Now's a great time because even if you do give away some secrets, well, you have all season to make new secrets.
Well, and there's, you know.
All off season, yeah.
And it's also people like us who can't get to every haunt all over the world, but we would love to see them.
Yeah.
We would pay to see them online.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's something to think. That's pulling a page from some of our tour guide friends who have been doing virtual tours.
Yeah, and those have worked really well.
Yes,
They've been really cool. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, give it some thought. I would say that is another easy one. Like I said, all of these are designed to be things that are easy.
Easy, year-round.
Fast.
Mostly
low
virtual.
Risk.
Yeah.
I don't think any of these carry significant risk.
No.
Yeah, these are money-making opportunities I think haunts should be jumping on.
Yeah.
And aren't, you know, by and large. So that's it for the topic. This brings us to the question of the week. Do we have any answers? I noticed a few people in chat, but it went by too quick.
They weren't talking about the question.
Oh, okay.
I think maybe the question was not a good question.
All right.
So we'll do the posting on Wednesday.
Wednesday, yep.
To put it out there again to people, maybe give you some time to think about it.
Yeah, and we didn't actually answer it ourselves because we didn't want to give away what we were talking about.
Yeah, any of these. Pick them on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think my personal favorite year-round revenue source for haunts would be the online merch booth / gift shop.
Yeah, because that's what I look for most often.
Who was it that did the honey?
Haunted Honey.
Yeah, Haunted Honey.
It's in Louisiana, but basically sometimes bees make honey in cemeteries, in the tops of gravestones and things. And these guys have found a way to go and collect the honey, and are now selling it.
Yeah, they're selling honey from graves.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome. And honestly, that seems like it'd be a dead ringer for sale at a haunt or on a haunt's website.
Yeah, exactly.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Seems easy to me.
It does.
Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for joining us this week. I greatly appreciate it. The chat's definitely been active.
Yeah.
This week. I appreciate everyone who joined us live, and yes, I appreciate all of you who are joining us after the fact, whether on YouTube or via your favorite podcast app. Once again, this is Haunt Weekly. This was episode 259, talking about year-round revenue sources for haunts. You can find us at hauntweekly.com, Haunt Weekly on Twitter, Haunt Weekly on Facebook, youtube.com/hauntweekly is the aforementioned YouTube channel. And once again, you can find us on Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. We're probably there. So until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And we will see you guys next week for episode 260, which means it's time to do
the news.
Should be an interesting wrap-up to the 2020 season.
Yeah.
We'll see you all then.